Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, it is the third and final hour of the show. I'm not going to lie, it's went in like a rocket. I thought it was going to be a long show today. Monday morning, grey drizzle. I was running about earlier on this morning. I had to leave my car in to get serviced. I'm thinking, oh, what's it going to cost? What's it going to cost? I was walking up the road. I got wet. I'm cold. I was thinking it's going to be a long show. But no! Like a rocket, it's gone in. The beauty about talking to cool people is time goes by pretty damn fast. Not like you're talking to numpties. Are Muppets. When you talk to a Muppet, it's like time stands still. But when you're talking to decent human folk, oh my word, it's a pleasure. And I had the pleasure of speaking with Joel Aegis this morning from Sydney, and then Kate Fontenelle in from a day's canvassing in Melbourne, telling us what she's doing for the Lib Dems over there. Doing a damn fine job, I might add. And let's hope they get some election success on the 26th of November in Victoria. Now we're jumping across to New Jersey to the home of Jesse Surowell. No, not Bruce Springsteen. Not John Bon Jovi. Two people actually of note. Jesse Surowell and Tony Soprano. That came back into my head earlier on today. James Gandolfini, The Sopranos. We need Tony Soprano in politics, I think. But before we go down that route, just some items making the news, some of which I will throw out there, some of which I will revisit with Jesse and we'll break them down. A gentleman in England today, this is warts and all, I suppose, my son's eye-watering mortgage of £750 a month will go up by approximately £500 a month if he rises to the now forecasted 5% interest rate. His fixed rate fuel deal has also expired and doubled. He will need the extra £10 a month the tax cuts give him to survive, obviously very tongue in cheek. So his monthly bills are set to go up by about £1,000 or $1,080. The pound is also tanking against the dollar, by the way. So £1,000, $1,000, it's pretty much the same thing these days. We're getting an extra £10 a month in tax breaks to offset the £1,000 a month in increased prices. How wonderful is Kwasi Kwarteng? And he had the bare-faced cheek to sit on News Today when he was said, this is a budget for the rich. This is a budget for the rich and the rich will get richer. And he said, no. Everybody benefits. Everybody benefits. He's kind of true. It's right. But benefiting by £10 a month when your outgoings are going up by £1,000 a month, it's not good, Kwasi. It's only good if you're on 150 grand a year or you're a banker with an uncapped bonus coming into the bank this Christmas. Oh, it's wonderful. But if you're the common bloke or woman on the street, it's not so hot. So, what else is going on? Giorgia Meloni has already set her stall out as proposing establishing a naval blockade of Italy's shores to deter boatloads of migrants and refugees arriving from North Africa. And she's being criticized for this. Listen, if you're in Italy and you see a dinghy on the horizon and it's full of Moroccans, young fighting age Moroccan militants, it's not good. It's not good. They're coming to rape, pillage and destroy. And I'm generalizing, yes, but that's the vast majority. They're not coming to contribute economically. They're not fleeing from death. If they're coming from Algeria, they're not under threat or persecution. They're just coming to leech economically. And I've said this also, if I was an immigrant, if I was in Morocco, I would be doing it too. If I was an Algerian, I'd be looking across the sea going, hey, if we can make it to the promised land, i.e. Italy, France or England, we get a house, we get money every week, we get a visa, we get medical care. Of course they're going to come because nobody's stopping them. But Meloni, Giorgia Meloni, is planning on sending the Navy out. And they will be not passing the Navy, let me say. Those thingies may even be torpedoed. We hope not, but she's sending out a message and fair play to her. In Canada, 35 doctors this year alone in their prime are dead. Just recently, this week, 46-year-old Toronto family doctor Maria Chang died suddenly on September the 8th. Actually, now that is 35 total Canadian doctors dead this year, young in their prime. Down they went. Doctors themselves. So no one's immune and no one's exempt, sadly, from this attack on civilization through the point of a needle. That includes the doctors that are administering these shots in some cases. It's sad and it's tragic, but you know, it's what they are aiming for, depopulation. And if you don't believe that or you're not convinced on that yet, let's time stamp this and come back in a year and see what it's like then. And I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping a lot of people are okay. And I'm hoping we're over-exaggerating things. And I'm hoping we've got it horribly wrong. But I'm sorry to say, but these incidences are becoming more and more frequent. But time will tell. Let you know that we have a website, tntradio.live. We are also on all social media platforms. So if you have Getter, Gab, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, or any of those platforms, look out for TNT Radio there. Connect with us, follow us, spread our good news around, the truth that we're telling around, and try and shake a few people into consciousness with the assistance of TNT Radio.
All talk, all the time.
I like the conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Mr. Zurawell, I am happy to see you again. How are you, sir? First and foremost, forget about the news. How are you doing as a human being?
I'm doing all right, and I'm happy to see you as well. So let's get it on, as Marvin Gaye sang.
Let's get ready to rumble, as the old commentator said. Yes, that was awful, by the way. Sorry for anyone that was traumatized by that. There's a lot to talk about. I'm making two word notes: false flag, Georgia Maloney, immigration, Israel, Palestine. Two words is enough to spark an hour's worth of conversation. Where are we going to start today? I'm going to ask you that question. I could start anywhere you like. Where do you want to start? What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. So you tell me where to start and I shall do so.
Okay. Here's where we're going to start. Across between World War II movie and The Terminator. Okay. I've seen footage this morning here's the description. The Israeli army is now using an AI-powered automatic weapon called a smart shooter at a military checkpoint in the old city of Hebron, right? Now, this is weird. And I'll tell you why. There's a video of a turnstile type checkpoint where Palestinians are coming in and out. And above it, there's a semi-automatic weapon of sorts surrounded by a casing with a camera on top that's moving around, watching people. It's bad enough having a gun pointed at you. And I've had guns pointed at me in the past in various parts of the world. It's not a pleasant feeling, let me just say. Kind of makes you a little bit edgy, all right? It's bad enough when a human is pointing a gun at you, like a sniper or an army or a cop. But the fact that this thing is automated and it's moving around, literally watching you, I don't know, but as I watched that, I felt uneasy even watching it. It's like that thing could accidentally misfire, or if they decided to take you out, they could say it was a malfunction, the software didn't work. It's almost like they could bump you off, right, and alleviate all blame from a human operative. They could put it down to short circuit or an electronics malfunction. Is it not a little bit I would prefer a sniper up there. At least if he shot me, I could blame him. But if it's a bot, how do you take a bot to court? How do you take a bot to trial? How do you jail a bot for shooting your mother and father?
Well, when human Israelis murder Palestinians, they're rarely, if ever, punished. So it's certainly not being done to avoid punishing living, breathing occupation soldiers. It's being done, I would say, for a number of reasons. One, first and foremost, to continue to oppress, occupy, and genocide the Palestinians in their native land. And two, it's being done to test out new technology. And Israel has a long history of testing out its new technology on the Palestinians it has occupied for well over 70 years at this point. And this includes technology like what we're talking about here with an AI-powered sniper at checkpoints, as well as weaponry like certain bullets, for example, that once they penetrate the flesh, explode. And I'm not talking about conventional hollow-tipped bullets. I'm talking about ones developed by Israeli weapons manufacturers for military use, for use by occupation snipers. These bullets were used extensively during the Great March of Return protest in Gaza in 2018. And a lot of Palestinian men were shot in the legs purposely by occupation snipers, and many, many, many of them became amputees because of these bullets. They had to have their legs removed because these bullets entered and exploded and destroyed their legs permanently. So they had to have them amputated. Lots of Palestinian men in Gaza will, for the rest of their lives now, walk around on crutches with one leg because they were intentionally targeted by occupation snipers while peacefully protesting and were essentially turned into sport by these snipers. So what we're seeing with this AI-powered sniper, I don't know what else to call it, at a checkpoint or checkpoints in occupied Hebron is par for the course for the Zionist occupation entity that calls itself Israel. This is another step in its occupation and occupation of and genocide against the Palestinians in their very own native land. And I think it's almost certainly a matter of time before this technology malfunctions, either genuinely or in inverted commas, and kills a Palestinian civilian or Palestinians. And Israel will forever justify making such moves by saying it's doing so to protect itself against security threats. Israel is actually still in a legal state of emergency and has been in a legal state of emergency since it became a state, in inverted commas, in 1947. So it justifies moves like these by that state of emergency and security threats from the Palestinians it's been occupying since 1947 and genociding since at least 1947.
Yeah, just on that note, like I said, marrying all that together and taking on board your point there where you said, you know, even if a human is to carry out an execution or a target practice on a civilian, they're very rarely brought to justice. A little bit like, I suppose you would say, you know, if a cop shoots someone in America, it's highly unlikely that the cop will ever be charged with murder, even though, you know, some of them are bloody straight up executions. I've seen it happening. You know, I've seen cops executing people, executing them on camera, but when it's went to trial, they've walked away, maybe got a suspension or been moved to another unit. I get that point. And it kind of ties in with what I'm thinking that, how would you say this, that if a cop was to open fire on 30 people and kill them all, that would be hard not to prosecute. But for example, if a sniper takes out a Palestinian, or, you know, a couple of people in a car and they say they were terrorists, you could brush over that. They could spin it. But if they were to kill maybe 30 people, difficult to justify that if it's a human. If it's a drone with a, you know, an AR-15 attached to it and it goes rogue at a checkpoint where there's a high density of people, it's a different story. It's like, well, it wasn't a human did it. You know, it was AI malfunction, or it was a chip or short circuited. And how can you hold anybody to task for that? Maybe I'm overanalyzing it, but I'm seeing this move towards accountability being taken away for people's horrific actions. And I think they will increase in intensity and severity. So therefore, they will be able to blame someone other than, for example, a human operative. But I've sent you that through, actually. I've sent you that link through just for you to see it for yourself. It's very disturbing. And when you see it, you're like, fuck, I wouldn't want to be standing under that thing, especially there, especially in Hebron. Whew, hells, I would be taking a detour rather than going through that point myself. But anyway, that's just me. We've got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll look at maybe, because I've been touching on it with the other guests, this new PM in Italy, Giorgia Meloni. Some people are saying she's the savior. Some people are saying we've got to watch out. She's got some dodgy connections, as is usually the case with a politician. But we'll maybe delve into that a little bit detail when we come back after the break here on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
Jeremy Beck on TNT Radio.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has walked back an election promise to legislate a new federal anti-corruption commission by year's end, saying that the government's pledge is only to introduce the bill to Parliament. Now, I suppose they're worried about the lost sitting days arising from the official period of mourning of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and that would take out a bit of time there. But I really don't think the Corruption Commission would necessarily stop corruption, just the same as the Royal Commission doesn't necessarily stop problems even after hours and hours and thousands of hours of going through all sorts of scandals in the past. The corruption just keeps happening over and over again. Call me cynical, but that just seems to be the case.
Jeremy Beck on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
If you want the jibby jab,
all right, enough,
then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm sure you've had a glance at the old geopolitical landscape this morning. It's hard to dodge the fact that there's a new PM in town in the shape and form of Giorgia Meloni in Italy. And sadly, I might say, the comparisons are already being made with Benito Mussolini She's the first far right extremist fascist type PM since Mussolini and the black shirts were brought into power 100 years ago. Already we have this rhetoric, fascism, far right, Mussolini, black shirts, 100 years, the rise of the far right. Can this woman not cop a break even right from day one, or are the knives out already?
I don't know if the knives are out already, but I'm interested to see what she does in terms of blockading the toxic injections known as COVID-19 vaccines for Italians. I'm interested to see what she does with regard to the so-called mandates, so-called COVID mandates that Italians have been suffering under for the past 2.5 years. I'm interested to see what she does with regard to resisting the EU's continuing tumble into a globalist hellscape. So time will tell, but you mentioned some see her as the savior. That's up to them whether they want to hold her in that regard or not, but I don't regard any politician as a savior. Or a potential savior. None of them are going to save us.
No heroes. Think,
yeah, no heroes. I think
Verge.
I think it Throw might
a smile
be
smile to your face.
I think it might be early to start leveling criticisms at her in the form of or harking back to Mussolini, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm okay saying I don't know enough about her at this point to say I don't know what's to come or what to expect from her, but I think it will be telling, very telling, to see what she does in terms of the pseudo pandemic, which is still, I would say, the biggest problem facing humanity at this point. And if she falls in line with that, as her predecessor Draghi did, then it might not say it all, but it says most of it for me as to what to expect from her.
Yeah. That's a good point. And in fact, you raise a very good point. And you see all the manifestos and all the promises and all the rhetoric. I think, and because you said yourself, and I made a note of it down, okay, I want to see the way she is with COVID-19 vaccines. I want to see where she stands on mandates. So you see everything else. And this applies, I would say, to any politician anywhere in the world. This should be the plumb line, okay? And, you know, use it, for example, people are talking about Trump and DeSantis and they're going to turn America around and do this and do that. I don't care who the politician is from whatever party, anywhere in the world. The first thing we should know and understand is where do they stand on these vaccines and where do they stand on the mandating of these vaccines. And as we know, Trump still puts himself across as the father, the godfather of the vaccines. He thinks they're wonderful. He takes great pride in accepting that he rushed them through an Operation Warp Speed. That tells me all I need to know, okay? So when people are saying about DeSantis, he's this, he's that. Yes, he said that these should not be mandated for children, but what about mandates, period? What does he say about the vaccine, period? Is he telling people it's killing people? Is he telling people it's causing massive loss of life and loss of health? You know, where's his stand on that? Putin's another one. Putin's fighting against this. But Putin mandates it as well, and he has his own Sputnik version. So you rightly said, and I use this now as my own barometer, see all the other rhetoric, because you mightn't have time to suss everything out. Like you said, I don't really know her and I'm not really sure, but you only need to know two things. Where does she stand on the vaccines? And where does she stand on the mandating of the vaccines? If the answer to that is, well, she's pro-vaccine or she's pro-mandate, that tells you. That tells you all you need to know. And listeners, save yourself a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of research. Just cut to the chase, like Jesse has said. I want to know this and I want to know that. And if she ticks those two boxes, well, then let's proceed further. But if those two boxes are not ticked, my friend, I say you discard and you cast to the side, because it's just another part of the, in your own words again, and I'll coin your phrase, the globalist predator class. He's just another, maybe a wolf dressed up in sheep's clothing. I'm quoting you a lot. I'm quoting you back. And to quote Jesse again, time will tell. So we've got to take, I've just spent 3 minutes repeating everything back that he just said and giving him props for it. I'm not trying to fill time. I'm genuinely not. I like what you said. So I'm repeating it. I'm giving him the credit for it. So we'll be back after the news in 30 seconds-ish here on TNT Radio. Don't go away. More is incoming.
Darren Metzer here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australians could soon be allowed to grow and smoke cannabis in their homes, as a new push to legalize the drug gains momentum around the country. Five rescuers have died after being deployed to a village that had been flooded by a powerful typhoon in the Philippines. And the world's second largest fresh food market has gone up in flames in Paris. The market employs more than 12,000 people and supplies fresh meat, vegetables, and other produce to more than 18 million consumers.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, something else that caught my eye today. Connecticut. Connecticut becomes one of the first American states to require teaching of climate change by law. So it has to be incorporated into the curriculum, but not just the awareness of climate change / global warming / whatever, but that we are responsible for it and we need to take actions to help reverse it. This is now being brought in as law to Connecticut, and the reference is iflscience.com. School, I never really enjoyed it. I get the feeling you maybe didn't either. Call me presumptuous, call me judgmental. I get the feeling you and me probably had the same feelings about school. While we were there, our head bodies were there, but our heads were elsewhere. Is that true of you as well as me, or am I jumping to a conclusion about you?
For the most part, I would say that in high school, I had very good English classes where I was introduced to poetry and fiction, very good literature. And I fell in love with poetry, especially, but also fiction, novels, short stories. And I've carried that with me since then. But outside of that, it was a slog, and I couldn't wait to get out each day and get on my skateboard. So you got it mostly right. But with regard to what's happening in Connecticut, and this is the first I'm hearing of it, I'm confident in saying this is completely, utterly indoctrination. It's not education. It's not science. This is indoctrination that's in line with the woke agenda, as some people refer to it, as I refer to it. This is pseudoscience. This is the rewriting of history in a way, or the ignoring, the erasure of history, if we look back on how the Earth's climate has changed over time, ice ages, heating periods, cooling periods, and it's to cultivate a new generation of people who spout this nonsense and will advocate for moves ostensibly combating climate change. But the climate change scam, as we've talked about before, is really about monetary policy and finance, and about creating a new market or markets based on the financialization of nature. And those who are all grown up right now and pushing for that are trying to seed that into a younger generation so that they grow up. And this is not only normal to them, but something that we must do. We must live a life of carbon credits, of looking at trees as carbon sequestration services instead of trees. It's pure indoctrination in service of globalist agendas, in service of, in particular, UN agendas like sustainable development goals, in service of environmental, social, and governance. Also, resilience is now a part of that. These asset ratings, which underpin this creation of a new market out of nature, ESG R, with the resilience in there, can also be traced back to the UN. In a 2004 document they put forth called Who Cares Wins. Essentially meaning, whoever cares about the changing climate and how we've destroyed it and contributed to it through our breathing and through cow flatulence. Yeah. If you care about that and you make moves to combat that, then you're going to win.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. To summarize everything I just spit out, it's indoctrination in service of a globalist agenda that has to do with the financialization of nature to create a new international monetary and financial system to replace the one that we're daily seeing demolished in an intentional way before our very eyes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the indoctrination twice, and this is just to encourage you, by the way. Of course,
it would start in Connecticut too, which is one of the most. It makes sense. If you know Connecticut, it makes perfect sense.
Well, I don't know Connecticut, but I'm going to defer to your knowledge of the American states and say, yep, if Jesse Zerwell says Connecticut makes sense, well, then Connecticut makes sense. You said
it was either there. Twice. It was either there or California or New York.
But not New Jersey. Not New Jersey. I've got to tell you this. Listen, I've got to tell you this. Someone's listening to you right now in France. Like literally, they're listening to you right now in France, and they've just sent me a message, and I'll quote it, what that man said, i.e. you, climate change education, in inverted commas, is pure indoctrination. And this lady, Sarah Plumley, is a militant guerrilla teacher, home education advocate, an absolute diamond. So she's listening to you right now, and she's nodding furiously, I would imagine. I can't see her, obviously, but she's nodding furiously and messaging, going, yeah, what that guy said, it's indoctrination. And that's what it is. When you introduce something onto a curriculum and you say, you must teach this, you must teach it, but not just teach the concept, even to have it open for debate, but you must teach it, and then you must point the finger at your students and say, you, your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, your aunts, your uncles, and your cousins, you are the cause of this, and you must take steps to rectify that through your carbon footprint. So I suppose you could say, even if they wanted to introduce the debate over whether or not climate change is real, you know, having two sides to the story, a little bit of balance, let the students make up their mind, write an essay on why they think humans are not to blame, why they think they are to blame, you're going to get varying opinions. But this is telling you, you must teach it. And not only that, but you must incorporate the fact that humans are to blame. And unless humans take steps to reduce their carbon footprint, it's game over for all of mankind. I think that's what the problem is. It's this forced acceptance of a concept that doesn't really have any grounding in any kind of actual science at all.
Absolutely. It's assumed that it's settled science, as if science is ever settled anyway. And it's also very similar, and I think intentionally so, to the teaching of critical race theory, which assumes that there is an incipient or imminent race war about to break out in the US, and therefore we need to hold it off by teaching primarily white students this critical race theory, a part of which makes them feel guilty about being white, the same way this is almost certainly going to make students feel guilty about breathing, about contributing to the so-called destruction of Earth's climate with their carbon footprint. It's very much in line with that, and I think intentionally so. And it can't be said enough that this is indoctrination to train a new generation of humans to think and act a certain way that is fundamentally anti-human when you break it down. But of course, it's sold as benefiting humanity the way these things always are. Mm-hmm. Like the injection, get the injection, not just to protect yourself, but to protect humanity, which anybody with two brain cells to rub together can hopefully certainly see at this point is a complete falsehood, a murderous falsehood. But this is what we're looking at with this injection, no pun intended, of climate change into curriculum. It's insane when you really parse it and think about it. But as I said, in states like Connecticut, New York, California, these very blue states that have this common good mentality that is really anything other than for the common good, they fall for this crap and they go right for it, and they feel like it's a moral obligation they must undertake. That also makes them better than other people, than those who are ignorant and uncaring about the climate destruction that we're supposed to be able to see before our very eyes, like a heat wave in summer, like that's never happened before. It's insanity.
Ours lasted a day. And, you know, coming up, we've got a little ad break coming up in a minute. But again, some things that you said there, you know, about getting it into kids, indoctrinating kids now right off the bat. This must be in the curriculum. This must be taught. You know, we've talked about Yuri Bezmenov in the past. He says it takes 15 to 20 years to fully subvert a generation ideologically, because effectively it's the amount of time the average student will spend in an education system. So maybe someone coming off the back of and are finishing their education at this point, you know, that are only getting exposed to this at the end, they won't be susceptible. But for a 4-year-old or a five-year-old coming into an education now, they're pumping it into their heads now and probably will do if they get their way for the next 5, 10, or 15 years. So by the end of it, they'll be coming away thinking this is the way it is. And just to think about this between you and me, because we're both sort of are coming from the same place in terms of our, let's say, appreciation of our own school days. I was like you. You had your English class. I had my music class. I got to play my little guitar at break time. You got to read poetry and get introduced to some great works of fiction. My friend, how would we survive? I don't think you and I could hack sticking into that system today as it is, with the increased levels of indoctrination and BS and one-way systems and bubbles and hand sanitizing and this and that. It's actually like the hell that you experienced in school, or you perceived hell, on steroids. So I doff my cap to any kids these days that are hacking out the education system. I never skateboarded, chum, but let me tell you this, if I was in school right now, I would be buying one of those electric skateboards and getting out of Dodge ASAP. But anyway, that's just a little bit of humor there, because we'll have to laugh, because if we don't laugh, we cry. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll look at the very lovely subject, the false flag attacks, or as Patrick Henningsen called it, dirty bombing. Dirty bombing, and that's not as grotesque as it sounds. Let's talk about it when we come back after the ads here on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
How is that green energy transformation working for you? Energy chaos descends upon the world.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yahoo Finance is reporting this week that firewood is the new gold in Europe. Prices and theft jump in Europe as Russia's gas cutoff boosts wood demand ahead of winter. 1,000% increase in EU energy prices. The New York Times is reporting that, quote, crippling energy bills are forcing European factories to go dark. Due to the shortages and high cost of energy, manufacturers are furloughing workers and shutting down lines because they can't pay gas and electric charges. Makers of metal, paper, fertilizer, other products that depend on gas and electricity are now being shuttered in Europe. Half of Europe's aluminum and zinc production taken offline. But don't worry, I'm sure China and India will be able to fill this manufacturing void. This, my friends, is the Great Reset in action. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The Australian government has partnered with Twitter, Google, Apple, Meta, Facebook, TikTok, and Yahoo to regulate what Australians can and can't say on the internet. Disagree with what government is saying, and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, my friend, something we've touched on in great depth over the last 6 months, hell's bells, it's almost 7 months since Ukraine kicked off back in the 26th of Feb, unless I'm mistaken, give or take a day, give me a break, give me a day or two either side, leeway, 24th to 26th of Feb, as 24th. Sean Penn, was it the 26th?
24th.
It was. 24th. I knew it was one of the two. Yeah, I knew it was one of the two. Sean Penn had just done a wrap of shooting his documentary, and then Putin just sort of happened to push over the border, and then here we are today. That story, talking with people in everyday life, I was able to, I don't want to say educate, I was able to talk to someone yesterday who's lives a little bit down the street. We were talking generally. He brought up about the Ukraine. And I asked him the question. He said, do you know anything about the history of the country? Do you know anything about what's going on? How it all started? He says, no, I don't. I have no idea at all. So I was able to spend 5-10 minutes with him, giving him a little bit of a starter's guide to, you know, from 2014 and the regime change and Zelensky's background and Putin, et cetera, et cetera. So it did, he did take it all on board, and he said, I had no idea. I had no idea about any of that. And a lot of what we're seeing coming out there, Eve Bartlett, I think it is, she's been posting on Twitter. She's in the thick of it over there, posting about shellings that have been going on and Ukrainians shelling on the Donbass region, people being blown apart. There's no coverage of this in the mainstream media. It's all blurred out to avoid Twitter censorship. The media have done a fantastic job. The mainstream media have done a fantastic job of completely cutting off the general population on at large to what really is going on in Ukraine, and really done a fantastic job of demonizing Putin to be the course, the sole source of all our problems right now. Okay, and I'm not going into the, is he good, is he bad, is he... The bottom line is, no matter what's going wrong at the minute, he's being used as a convenient scapegoat for the economy, for gas prices, for inflation, and so on and so forth. The average Joe, unless they do a little bit of digging, doesn't have any clue what's going on. The rhetoric is changing, and they're introducing the concept of nuclear war. I don't think there will be a full-on nuclear war because of mutually assured destruction. However, I do feel that the possibility of a tactical strike or a nuclear reactor going up a la Chernobyl is a very real possibility as a false flag event. They need something spectacular. I mean spectacular in terms of horror and scale and loss of life to be able to advance this war agenda further with Russia. What are you feeling about that? Could we see something on that scale in the short term that would lead things to a more hot war with Russia? Are they going to be foolish enough to go down that route? What do you see the trajectory as yourself, as an avid observer of the conflict over there?
Well, a false flag is certainly possible. It's always possible. As far as Russia using a nuclear weapon, as Patrick said at the start of the show in the news update, it doesn't make sense tactically for Russia to use one in Ukraine.
I meant America using one as a false flag, sorry, not initiated by Putin, because the narrative is very much now that he's losing the war. He's like a cornered dog. He will resort to that. I don't think he will, because I don't think he's losing the conflict. But I think if something happens, it will be he will be fingered as the culprit, is what I meant, rather than him actually doing something.
Well, I think the U.S. and its vassal states in the West are fully capable of doing such, and I would never put it past them. But I think we have to look at what's happening in Ukraine beyond just a nation state level or a rivalry or a war between nation states, and look at it from a globalist perspective and how it's affecting energy resources, how it's affecting global finance, the flows of capital. And there are a lot of very questionable things happening right now that have been happening since the start of this war. And though you're not allowed in Russia to call it a war, you must call it a special military operation. It is a war. But one of those questionable things is that Russia is still sending gas in a pipeline through Ukraine to Europe. And Ukraine, the Kiev regime, the Zelensky regime, makes money off of that transit of gas, of Russian gas to Europe. So Russia is essentially paying the regime it's at war with. Mm-hmm. That's something we need to seriously question. Why is that happening? Why are Ukrainian and Russian men being slaughtered while business as usual is still going on? We have to look at that, which is not to say that precludes a false flag being carried out by the U.S. But we have to ask how deeply these sides, how intensely, how, I hate to say genuinely, because there is a very real war going on, but is it between two sides who are opposed to each other, or is there some other architecture to it that is not visible to us, even those of us who are skeptical about what's been happening and are questioning what's happening? So another question we should ask is the shelling of Donbass, particularly Donetsk City. This has been happening for over 8 years, but it was ramped up in early July and has continued and only gotten worse since then. And to my knowledge, Russia is totally capable of stopping this shelling, but it's not stopping it. Now, why is that? That's a question we need to ask. It's similar. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar to what's happening in Syria. Whenever Israel bombs Syria, it seems that Russia cannot or does not want to use the surface-to-air defense systems it has in Syria. On top of that, before Israel carries out a strike on Syria, it calls or communicates with Russia in Syria and lets them know that it's about to carry out a strike. Why is suspect. That? Why is that allowed to happen? Suspect. Now, with regard to the surface-to-air defense, Vanessa Bealey, who's based in Syria, has said that this is because Syria and Russia don't want to give away the positions of those weapon systems, which are mobile, by the way, but they don't want to give away the positions of those weapon systems because when the strikes get really hot, when they really kick off, they're going to need those weapon systems. Now, that may be the case, but again, these are mobile weapon systems, so they can be fired and then moved. And in terms of the strikes getting hot, it wasn't that long ago that Damascus International Airport was bombed and almost completely ruined. So I would say things have gotten pretty hot. So in a sense, this idea, or it's more than an idea, this possibility of a nuclear false flag, it is something we should pay attention to and be concerned about. But we should also ask, why are we being directed toward this? Why is our focus being directed toward this? We should be looking at it, as I said, but we should also be asking questions about why, again, gas, Russian gas, is still transiting Ukraine to Europe, and Ukraine is making money off that, while Russia and Ukraine are, we're told, at war. Yeah. Why, for example, is a new joint space mission about to take place that includes two Russian cosmonauts and one American astronaut? What's the deal with that? If this really is a nation-state rivalry, if this really is West versus East, then why are these things still happening? These things that point to a more globalist style cooperation than a nation-state rivalry. So all of that to say that I think my opinion is that we need to look, yes, at the possibility of a nuclear false flag and be concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But we have to look deeper than what is put in front of us, even by independent media, even if independent media is focusing on the threat of a nuclear false flag, we should still ask, why is this the focus? Why aren't X, Y, and Z being questioned? Why aren't we looking at that?
Good point. And I'll tell you what, actually, you know, you made several, good observations there. One, in terms of the collaboration between, American and Russian astronauts. The other one to do with the supply of the gas still to a hostile aggressor or someone that you're at war with. The other one, so many things are the use of stopping the shelling when they have the capacity to do that. Let's just say this, with any good sleight of hand master, he will get you to concentrate on his right hand while his left hand is doing something that you don't see. A lot of the things we're concentrating on are international, happening in other places rather than what's going on our own doorstep. So maybe it's a timely reminder for you or a nudge for you, and one which I'm going to take on board to keep the focus more so at home on what's happening on our back door rather than maybe focusing completely on what's happening overseas, because it's all smoke and mirrors and sleight of hand. Jesse, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Thank you, my friend, for getting up and
coming on
and lending your insights. Always a pleasure. Gotta go. TNT Radio back tomorrow, locked and loaded.